Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you. All right, Brown, let's finish. Coach Carl.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome the author of the book, Executive Loneliness, The Five Pathways to Overcoming Isolation, Stress, Anxiety, and Depression in the Modern Business World. Please welcome Nick Johnson. How are you, Nick?
I'm very good, Tony. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
It's a fascinating topic that we're going to talk about today, because it's something that we're seeing right around the world at the moment, and something that's particularly relevant with what we've gone through with pandemic. But before we get into the conversation, share a little bit of the Nick Johnson story.
Yes, Tony, very briefly, I was born in Sweden. I left and moved actually to Gold Coast, Australia in 98, where I studied. And then after that, I moved to Southeast Asia, where I work now in mainly Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Singapore. Since 2004, I've had various manager roles, and moving my way up the career ladder to a general manager, having some pretty big roles for the international firms in the end. And that's my story. And then you will hear a little bit more about today why I took the leap from the corporate ladder and now doing something completely different.
I'm looking at your resume, and it's like executive networks. It's about the creation of space and connection for executives. So how did that come about, Nick?
Well, in my corporate career, and especially now when I'm looking back at it, I realize how lonely I was in my decision making. It was about perhaps elbowing my way to the top like many others do. You want to reach the next promotion, get the career going, and that was my priority. I was extremely goal-oriented. I joined all the seminars around the world, the Brian Tracy's and them and so, and it helped me to come to the top, but it was also quite a lonely space to be. And that's now, when I'm looking back, I want to help leaders to be better connected instead and really go deeper inside themselves.
Now, I can already hear some of the leaders listening to this starting to scoff, as if to say, what do you mean loneliness? Isn't the goal all about getting to the top, as you describe in your journey? So what are some of the illuminating or visionary things that people can sense within themselves that the journey isn't sustaining them, and that potentially they do need a little bit more social connection?
Well, I think the main issue, Tony, for me was that the challenges I had, I didn't discuss them with my boss because I didn't want to be vulnerable or seeing that I didn't have the answer. I also didn't discuss them with my wife at home because she wouldn't understand it. And I didn't, unfortunately, have a proper mentor. I didn't also have an executive coach or business coach to help me analyzing this. So it meant that I went to bed feeling bad about many topics. And when you do that year after year, you don't discuss your challenges with someone, then it compounds, and in the end, it breaks you down. And that is what happened in my case and what happens in many. We are so scared to be vulnerable. We're so scared to open up. We're so scared to ask for help, especially perhaps us men, that we just keep going and we keep pushing. And yes, I also had a lot of failures along my journey because of this, because I didn't ask for help. But many times also it went very well. I did a good job, but I didn't feel well, because I didn't feel connected with other people. It's lonely at the top, as you say, Tony.
Yeah, one of my mentors is a gentleman called John Maxwell, who's written a couple of leadership books here and there. And he always says, if you're lonely at the top, you've done it wrong. You know, because one of the aims of leadership is to help you bring and multiply leaders along with you. And once again, I'm just thinking about the mental health of executives, and I'm thinking about what you were just talking about and seeing that there's a lot of internal mechanisms there. Things like I fear being vulnerable. I don't want to be taken advantage of. But there's also a huge thing here in relation to company culture, isn't there? So if you're not in an environment where vulnerability is allowed, let alone accepted and embraced, you are going to be really challenged to find those mentors and to find that space to talk through things.
Yes, and not as an excuse, but also we're talking here in Southeast Asia, we have the culture barriers, the language barriers, and in many of the roles I've been the only expatriate in the company. Everyone else have been of locals. Yeah. So it's very difficult to integrate, and we're also a bit warned to perhaps, you know, how much do you disclose, because at the end of the day, an expatriate will be on a bigger package, and there could be jealousy, and there can be all sort of things. So we also asked to be a bit careful, and so that's a unique position indeed to be in. But I completely agree with you. It is the company culture, and it is the leaders at the top who need to really set here the company culture and encourage vulnerability and transparency, so that we are connected as human beings as we are.
How does that start? I mean, it starts at the top, obviously, or the CEO, the person sitting in the chair, sets the tone. But what are some of those things that you can see in organizations where that connection space is happening with vulnerability and, you know, authentic leaders? What are some of those things that you see in that space that people can take on board to start implementing into their business potentially?
Well, I think there's two things we can look here at, Tony. One is obviously internally in the company, but secondly, and I think where the focus should be, is externally. I think many times we shouldn't look for the answers internally in the company, because for various reasons it might be challenging, or it might not exist, or it might not even be supported by the company. But it's up to us what we do with our own time and our own budgets, and I think we need to invest in ourselves to have this support outside the organization. And that's what I do different these days. As soon as I face a challenge, a difficulty or something, I recognize it, I write it down, and then I think, who can I ask for help? Who should I go to? Who is the best person? Is it my mentor? Is it getting a coach? Is it joining perhaps a confidential peer group? Or is it, where can I get the answer? How can I talk about this now so I get a better feeling inside me?
So with the pandemic, with that, in having gone through, and hopefully we're popping our head out the other side, what are some of those things that you've seen in leadership and executive ranks? Because some have been forced to work from home, some have been forced to lead teams that are being worked from home. So what have you experienced, or what have you seen or observed with executives during this time?
Well, obviously, all around the world, people and teams have to work remotely, and everyone had to do the best effort in trying to unite the teams while being remotely. And I think in this aspect, while leaders have perhaps been more isolated and more lonely, it has also actually encouraged this dialogue, this conversation we have now. It's been more leaders who asked and checked in on the teams to see how they are, and there's been more awareness about this. Yeah. And the topic doesn't have as much stigma anymore. To discuss mental health is now okay, which is a blessing.
It certainly is, the ability to be talking about, you know, in a much more authentic way, what a healthy mind, what a healthy individual actually looks and performs like, I think has been a massive step forward. So if isolation can work in a workplace, isolation in a workplace is probably another part of the topic that we're talking about. It's not just executives that can often feel that they don't have that supportive, that connected network around them. You can work in a pretty close team and still be isolated within that team, I would imagine. Is that something that you've experienced?
Yes, definitely. And also even the senior leaders. I interviewed one particular lady who is a managing director for a big international bank. I interviewed her for the book, and she said that, yeah, while she made it to the top as the managing director, she felt lonely. And she said that when the colleagues went for lunch, they didn't ask her to come because who want to have the boss at the table when they go for a lunch? And she said that that hurt her. She wished she could be a part of the team. But then when she reflected on it, she realized that it was her own making. She was the one who probably were closest to the board instead, because she wanted a promotion. She wanted the extras that come with it. And it was only in the pandemic when actually this turned around for her, when she had a complete breakdown, and she decided eventually to open up to the team and share it. And what she found then was that even one of the board members opened up and another staff member opened up, and they had a wonderful conversation about this, and the culture have now transformed and they are much more open. And she says that she now go for lunch with her team once a week, which she hadn't done for years.
Yeah, and you mentioned breakdown, that word that would send shivers through the down the spine of many, many leaders. We talk about being able to be vulnerable in how we speak, and there's probably nothing more vulnerable or fearful for an executive as to that concept of going through a breakdown of whatever magnitude. So what are some of the symptoms or the signs that someone is feeling that stress or depression, feeling isolated? What is it that they may be able to pick up on before it gets to that stage?
Well, in many times this can be gaining weight, loss of weight, or picking up some bad habits. Many times it's alcohol. Perhaps the person stops exercising or picking up the drink instead, going to the bar after work instead of the gym. That's certainly what happened when I had my crash around 2015. I lost interest in the healthy things in life and went for the shortcuts. And then, it starts... But then it's a downward spiral, and before you know it, you lose your health, you lose your sleep, and then you're on the bad way. And it takes a long time before people realize it, and people might just tap you on the back. Oh, good on you that you don't take your exercise so seriously. It's good to see that you're enjoying your life. Let's go for a beer. It's very sociable, and it's acceptable to do that in our society. So for external people to realize it, it's very difficult. And let's face it, we can pick a friend to go with a bar and have a beer every day, a new friend, and so no one really recognize it. And perhaps if you're working and you're busy, it's very accepted.
I know that when I was working with within the corporate space as a leader, it was also quite accepted that we would utilize that, Friday afternoon to sit back and have a beer at a social venue or what have you. But it was also an accepted part of, that's when we would change the world in our eyes, and we'd have a vent or we'd have a whinge or we'd complain about something. And then sometimes that was productive because someone within the group might be able to say, well, this is how I'm doing that. But quite often it was destructive because we were focusing on the negative. We were in a negative behavioral trend, and we were focusing on the negative impacts within our roles. So I would have said at the time, Nick, that I was connected and that it was a positive thing. But when I look back in hindsight, it probably wasn't.
Yeah, and I think that's a good reflection. I mean, everything in moderation. And yeah, if you go for a drink or two, that's fine. But if that turns into an all-nighter, then... it's probably the conversations at the end is not going to be very productive. It would be about gossiping and sharing bad stories rather than productive. So I think you're quite right.
Yeah. How important is it for leaders at all levels to be mindful of the concept of executive loneliness and also sharing their reflections or their stories?
Well, vulnerability has to start from the top. If you're not vulnerable as a leader in your organization, you can't expect that your team will open up. They will just keep everything secret and silent. So it has to start with you. And you don't have to, tell your staff all your biggest secrets. It's about sharing some things that are happening in your life, showing some interest for your fellow colleagues, and asking them about their family, their well-beings, and also share a little bit about yours, and you can also share external readings and having perhaps, you know, a town hall once a week or once a month when you do some sharing. And you have to open up the floor first and share a story. And if you don't feel like sharing about you, share some case study about another leader just to get the conversation started. And then throw the question out. How are you feeling these days?
It's incredibly important that all of those things. And I guess when leaders aren't used to being vulnerable or sharing that vulnerability, they get an incomplete view of what vulnerability is. And as you were saying, it's not about sharing your deepest, darkest secrets and the extent of how it is that you're feeling. In many ways, it's just good emotional intelligence to be able to acknowledge how you're feeling about a particular process, system, person, performance, and then being able to articulate in a way that helps people understand you as a leader a little bit more.
Yes, absolutely. And it's about having conversations about feelings. It's about talking about how we feel also in business. It's about taking a break, perhaps going slower sometimes and go deeper inside ourselves and just think and feel rather than rushing from A to B and just driving for the KPIs and so on. Because at the end of the day, isn't it important how we feel when we go back from work and so on? We shouldn't have people collapsing, breaking down. And I'm sure you know also many people who have had heart attacks and so on related to the stress at work. And that is what we need to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. So your book is called Five Pathways to Overcoming Isolation, Stress, Anxiety and Depression in Executive Loneliness. What is it that, what are those five pathways and what does that look like?
It is basically my learning journey of going through the breakdown and coming out of it and so on. And I thought, when I went through this, I wish I had the guidebook for it. So I actually mapped out everything and put it in a book. And they had the five steps then, and I'm happy to talk you through them. The first step is taking stock. Mm. So step one is taking stock. And what I mean with that is just like if you have a shop, you do inventory or stock take once a month, once a quarter, or once a year. Mm. When you're taking a deep, honest look and see, what do I have here? Well, as human beings, we rarely do that. So what I mean with taking stock is really being honest with yourself and write down on a paper or a spreadsheet what's going on in your life and looking at that. Have I gained 20 kilos in the last year? Am I consuming too much alcohol? Mm. Do I talk to my sister? Is the relationship broken? What about my boss? Do we have a good relationship? So it's a 360, and this you can do by yourself or perhaps with the help of a coach where you really map out everything about yourself.
Yeah. So that was step one, taking stock.
Yeah, and then on once you have that in order, then the second step is asking for help. So with everything you mapped out, think about who can help me with what. So in my case, I was very ill when I broke down, and I was way overweight. I lost exercise, consuming too much alcohol. My relationships were broken. I went through a divorce and all these things. So I needed, obviously, to ask for help. And that's what I did. And with everything on the list, I took action, basically, and really asking for help. And that led me then to step three, which was getting healthy. I had to sort out myself, my body, before I could move on further.
Okay. And then so we're in a much healthier state than when we started. So just the final two steps, what would they look like for any prospective leaders thinking that they could certainly do with some inspiration to move and connect more freely and more socially with people?
Yeah, so because we're talking about executive loneliness here, the step four was nurturing healthy relationships. Because what I realized, I had burnt so many relationships. I had left them, I had been too selfish. So it's about going back to make amends and apologize and clean up everything, because we walk around with so much baggage so much feelings when as soon as we start thinking about the person, we have a bad feeling about them. And I give you one example here. I went back to make amends to my sister about an episode, something minor that had happened about 10 years earlier, something that was on my mind that was not a present feeling. And it was basically a small incident where she had ordered a Coca-Cola to my son, who was only a few years old then, and I didn't think that he should have a Coke. And I stormed off the table being angry, you know, and we didn't speak for about 1 year. I avoided her for 1 year after that. And but when I mentioned this and made amends 10 years later, she had forgotten all about the incident. So it was only in my mind. She didn't pay much attention to it at all. And you know, that's the amazing thing, right? So in my case, I had to go back and clean up all those relationships.
Yeah. So what you thought was a big issue was actually not a big issue in the other person's mind. Wow, that's... how many times does that happen with families? But it can be the slightest thing and all of a sudden you've got this rift in the family and people go to their deathbeds not wanting to make amends or not admitting that or wanting to say sorry. It's just crazy. So you've mentioned during our conversation the ability to go external. So often the answers won't be internal and often we need to look external. Now, you run a business in relation to peer networks. You're the founder of the Executives Global Network for Singapore. So walk me through what that looks like.
Yeah, so basically at the Executive Global Network in Singapore, we do confidential peer groups for senior executives. So it's basically an organization where if you are a senior executive, you can join this organization. You have six half-day sessions in a year, scheduled a year in advance. You have no competitors in the room. Everyone signs a non-disclosure agreement. And this is where you come in to discuss your work-related challenges, issues you may have with your boss or your team or things like this or conflict. And you get then support by the other peers who are in the same seniority as you to get their advice and to solve them. So you should leave this session, you know, feeling refreshed and having a lot of new ideas to bring into your organization. So at the moment we have almost 700 of these members divided in 21 groups here in Singapore now, and for that it really helps the members. They then have this safe space outside the organization where they can get this support.
So it's a half day session six times a year. And so what is that? Is that like, does it follow a strict format? So I know a lot of leaders will be knowledgeable about, say, the business network, the BNI process. That's very structured, very process driven. It's designed for building your business as opposed to, you know, and your emotional and wellness. So how does yours differ from something like a BNI?
Yeah, so indeed, BNI is about the relationships and referral business, while at EGN it's 100% knowledge sharing. So it's about getting the support. But in between the sessions, they also on a mobile app where they can post a query. So if I'm sitting at the desk today and I want to recruit, let's say I need a new CFO in Sydney, you can ask the group, who knows a good recruitment firm in Sydney who can help me with this? Or I need about transfer pricing between Australia and Indonesia, or tax laws, who can help me with this? So if you are a small business owner, then you would be in a business owner peer group. But if you are the CEO of a big multinational, then you will be in a group with other CEOs with big multinationals. So your problems and should be similar and the experience should be similar, so you can help each other with the knowledge instead of the referring of businesses. It's more in the knowledge sharing.
Is there barriers for executives that want to join? Or I would imagine, I'll rephrase that. I would imagine a lot of executives would actually impose their own barriers on joining something like that. How do you navigate if someone has reached out for an executive or the HR team believe it would be something that's a positive thing for their CEO or what have you?
Yeah, it's more the executives or business owners themselves who are interested in joining not so much the HR still. I think the HR tend to focus on internal mentoring, coaching programs, and their own training academies, especially the big multinationals have this. So this is more for some, for the executive to take on for themselves. And it's a bit almost like you have at Harvard, they have something called Advanced Management Program also, where you come into Harvard for a week and you discuss your challenges, your strategies, get feedback on that. You come back into your organization to implement them, and then you come back to Harvard 3 months later for an evaluation week. So, but this, the difference here is that you have something ongoing and you have something on a day-to-day basis. So you really get to know each other. You start to become vulnerable. I've been in our meetings when there's been leaders who break out in tears because it's a very challenging situation. You can even put yourself in a hot seat when you really get 15, 20 minutes to lay out in detail a challenging issue that is happening in your business. Can be maybe even drawing up an organization chart and saying, this doesn't work, it's a breakdown in communication here, what do you think? And then you get 15, 20 executives around the table to help you with their advice.
100% knowledge. That's fascinating. And you know, I can certainly see the need and the return on that investment that they would get. They've got a peer network. It's confidential. That's amazing. Is it just are you just based in Singapore with that particular business model, or are you elsewhere now?
No, we are in about 15 countries. There are a few groups in Australia also, actually, and hopefully expanding. Hopefully this is a growing industry now, as more and more leaders are actually looking at how can I improve myself, not only the performance, but also perhaps my feelings, which is related to this, because if you feel that you have people who support you, who listen to you, can help you, you will naturally feel better, and ultimately the result will also be better for you and for your organization.
Absolutely. Hey, Nick, you've obviously had this real journey to help and support others. So who has been someone that's inspired you during that journey?
Well, Tony Che, the founder of Zappos, has inspired me. He built up a culture in the company which was about delivering happiness. And I went over to Las Vegas in 2013 and spent 3 days with him and the team and in a delivering happiness boot camp. And it was all about how to set up a culture where it feels more like a family rather than an organization.
Excellent, excellent. What about your relationship with that horrible thing we know as failing or failure? So how would you describe your relationship with failure?
In my company now, and you can call us a scale-up. We've been a startup, we're almost a scale-up company now. So it's a lot of changes, growing fast, new team and so on. And I'm a big fan of fail fast. I say fail fast and write down the learnings, and then we have a team meeting for half an hour every week where we share, you know, what did we try. And even in the budgets for the marketing teams and so on, we set up a portion which we call is for experiments. So we say, this here is where you can have your freedom, your creativity, you can test some things. It doesn't matter if it works, just test it. And then if it doesn't work, fail fast and then tell us what you learned from this.
Excellent, what a great idea. So being able to put that into like a research component, I think that's fantastic. So what's the vision moving forward for yourself, Nick?
Well, I think that we need to slow down, go deeper in ourselves, and that is my vision. I really want to reflect more, and that means more breathing and perhaps some meditation, some sport, where I really reflect for myself so that the path is not too rushed. And I'm really trying my best to avoid news and social media. At least the social media that is negative and block it out from my life. I would just add to that, Tony. I say we were never meant to carry the burden of the whole world. And if we look on the news and social media, there will always be bad news somewhere in the world if we look for it.
Yeah, I love that concept. slow down and go deep. And I think there will be many listeners that are resonating with that. So how can people connect with you, Nick?
I'm quite active on LinkedIn. So yeah, you can look up me there. And if you look for Nick Johnson, it's NickJonsson. And then also otherwise, if you want to look into my book on Amazon and just search for Executive Loneliness, my book was a bestseller on men's health and mental health and top number one in Australia, if even for a day.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I'll make sure those links are all in the show notes. So, Nick, thank you so much for your time today and for adding value to today's leaders.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Tony.
If you're looking to build better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. We really are driving a leadership revolution to build tomorrow's best leaders today. Today's Leader is a collective, the mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business hosts our Today's Leader Mastermind. Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional, and business growth. Book your free 30-minute discovery call right from the homepage at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. Don't forget, wherever you are standing stronger, braver, and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.